Ricardo, please.
Yes, please go ahead. We're now recording.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to the Sick Who Is Working Group call on Tuesday, 12th March 2013. On the call today we have Mark Anderson, Roy Balisti, Christopher George, Frédéric Guillemot, Susan Kawaguchi, Marie-Laure Lemineur, Steve Metolitz, Mikey O'Connor, Susan Proser, and Jonathan Zook. We have apologies from Tim Ruiz, Don Blumenthal, Ilya Bazlyankov, Alan Greenberg, and Amar Elsad. And from staff, we have Mariko Konings, Lars Hoffman, Barry Cobb, and myself, Julia Charvelin. May I remind all participants to please state their name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you.
Thanks, Julia. And I note that Avery just joined the room, so I bet she's going to be on the call as well. Welcome, everybody. In addition to the usual review the agenda and update SOI things, I have to apologize to you all. I think I'm the one that threw off several people tried to call in an hour early, and it's because I misdescribed the way we were going to handle the time zone change. So for any of you who got faked out, I apologize. That was my mistake. Any updates to statements of interest or changes to the agenda that people want to put in? Okay. We've got a lot to review. This is a pretty heartening week in terms of lots of good material being developed and plans being made, so I'm going to push us a little bit harder on the agenda, and if people feel I'm going too fast, please slow me down. I'm not doing it to short-circuit anything. I'm just trying to get through what I think is a lot of really good material in an hour. And so with that, the first one up is in front of you. Right now, these are the two questions that we've got for the expert group. We've got a mailing list set up for them, and our thought here is that we will push these two questions along to them. So I mostly just want to force us to look at it. These look fine to me, and I'm perfectly content to release them to the group. So I just want the rest of you to look at this. Just take a moment to read it, and presuming it's okay with the rest of you, I think we'll release this one to the expert group. And while you're doing that, I just got a thought from Marika, which I want to pass along, which is we didn't get any comments on that summary Excel spreadsheet that Marika did all the heavy lifting on, but I brushed up a bit. And we just want to throw that question at you as well. It's fine if we did a good job, but if we didn't do a good job, we'd sure love to hear from you on that. So we've mentioned that a couple of times on the list, and I just want to remind you of that one too. I'm not seeing a whole lot of hands up on the questions for the experts, so I think we'll go ahead and push those along.
Rick Weston joining.
Right. Oh, hi, Rick. Welcome. Volker's joining. A lot of people are just chiming in. Okay, so Marie, go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to know, maybe, sorry if you have mentioned this before, but these two questions seems very pertinent to me, but I'm wondering, there are meant to be asked to people who were working for PIR at the time, right? So I was just wondering whether, in addition to PIR people, we're going to have experts that are not, that were not PIR staff at the time.
Yeah. And the answer, Maria, is yes, we do. We have a pretty good list of folks that were both at PIR and Afilias, and then some others as well, people who were just, you know, involved in one way or another. We might, I thought we circulated that list, but...
I'm sorry, I haven't seen it, but it's probably my fault.
Yeah, but it wouldn't hurt to circulate it again. Marika, could you take an action, or Lars, if you're on the call, just to dredge up that list and push it along to the email list so people know who's in that group. There's no secret to it. I've seen it a bunch of times, but I can't remember if it's gone to the general list, and it wouldn't hurt to do that.
Rick, I'll do so.
Okay, thanks, Marika. Avery, go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, thanks. This is Avery speaking. I don't know to what extent it's the expert group is the right, but the question I would have on question number two would be an additional part of the question. As I say, I don't know if this is the right place for it, but to what extent have circumstances changed in the last 10 years? In other words, you know, this was the privacy complaints a decade ago, so I'm wondering who is it that can give us the authoritative story on the circumstances having changed in the last decade, and therefore mitigating the applicability of this as defining information. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know the answer either. It wouldn't be a bad addition. Do you want to pen a little sort of supplemental question?
I can certainly write a sentence that says just that. To what extent has the situation changed in the last decade regarding privacy and data protection?
And so actually, this is Rick Lesson. I'm not sure that those people are in the same positions to answer that question, some of them. So applicability of the question of how is it different now than then, they may or may not be able to answer. But we know that they were in the position to speak to the issues around what happened, because that was in the past and they were there.
Yeah. Steve, go ahead. Well, Avery, is that a new...
Yeah,
I don't know.
Sorry, I'll put my hand down. Understood. That's why I said, is this the proper place to ask it, but it needs to be asked.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I don't think it's a terrible thing to ask them, and they can always say, well, I don't know. But anyway, Steve, go ahead.
I don't have a problem with asking, but I think that's a question for this group.
Yeah, that's probably right. We're better equipped to answer it.
They hear about what happened as input to our deliberations about what should happen in the future. So it's not to say that the past is prologue, but it's not necessarily going to be recapitulated. So that's for us to decide, really.
Yeah. Well, I think there's three jars. I think there's the jar that's in this question, which is way back when. Then there's the jar of, well, what's happened between then and now. And then there's the one, you know, Christmas future, what's going to happen going forward. And I don't think it's a bad thing. The nice thing about that expert group, and you'll see when you see the list, is that it's a very diverse group of people who've been over the intervening decade in lots of different organizations. And so even though they may not be the perfect group, they're not a bad group to start that questioning with, because they may be able to say, no, I don't know that, but here's the person who would. And so, Avery, if you were to pen that question in such a way that it encouraged the people to either answer if they know or let us know who might know, that would be helpful, I think. And, that way we can maybe do a little research on the intervening time. Well.
Okay, thank you. Will do.
Thanks. Anything else on these two questions besides that? We'll take, you know, we'll sort of wait for Avery's additional language and then, and maybe just put it in as a separate question. I'm not sure that it's that big a deal to as to how it flows, but we'll work that. Anything else on these? Not seeing any hands go up. Okay. Let's go on then to the work plan. One of the things that I asked Lars and Marika to do, either on the last call or maybe even the call before, was to take a first draft at a work plan to get us to an interim report. And this is their draft, and I wanted to walk through it with you. And one of the things that always startles me is the difference in the amount of time between ICANN meetings. You know, we've had a really long time between Toronto and Beijing. We have a relatively short time between Beijing and Durban. And I never really noticed that until you actually try and do a detailed work plan. But what you'll see in this work plan is that in order to hit an initial report by Durban, we're going to have to push along pretty quickly here. And so as you read down this list of basically tasks and milestone dates, what you see is that we're going to have to start really bearing down on these issues, you know, the topics and the issues associated with them. And you can see it's sort of starting immediately next week. You know, we have to take a look at the stability, data escrow, authoritativeness templates and start reviewing those with the goals of trying to get those in some sort of final form fairly soon. Now, that, when I looked at it in its first draft, scared the daylights out of me, but I'm really encouraged by the submissions from the groups that, in many cases, the groups have moved to a, you know, a point where they are almost ready to go, and so I'm less nervous about that, but I do want to emphasize that the pace is going to be pretty brisk in order to hit that deadline, and so I wanted to call that to your attention and get a sense from you all as to your reaction to that pace. I think it's a worthy thing to try and make this schedule because Durban would be a good time to be able to stand up in a public meeting and share an initial report and have a conversation with people about this. And so, with your permission, what I'm going to do is try to keep to this schedule, but recognize that circumstances may intervene and we may not be able to hold to it. On the other hand, if this absolutely drives you crazy right off the bat, this is a good time to talk about that. Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. So if I can maybe add some additional information on how we put the work plan together, because it basically follows the Excel sheet that we shared with you last week. So basically it goes from the assumption that on most of the topics, a majority of those that provided feedback haven't identified any particular issues and are, you know, either as a result in support of requiring CQA. So the focus would really be on working through those issues that have been raised as concerns. So to focus on those, try to see, you know, are those really issues that indeed are specific to CQIS, or are there broader issues? Are there ways to mitigate or address them? Do specific recommendations need to be developed? And in that way, work through the items. So as a result, you know, as we had several sub-teams, those have been identified for the first two meetings, and those groups have been very helpful in working on the templates. But for some of the other topics, we don't have sub-teams currently working. We have identified members that have expressed an interest, but they're not actively meeting or reviewing. So the idea is that the working group as a whole, or if indeed working artists up to feel that they do want to take on this work, start working on those topics and follow along with the template and the ideas. And that the template, even though, you know, I think Steve already indicated as well in his response that certain questions may not apply depending on the discussions you're having, will basically feed that into the initial report, or makes it easier as well to draft that initial report. And again, I think the Excel sheet is a kind of a guide there, or it's what we've tried to develop as a guide to help lead those discussions, really trying to focus on what are the issues identified, and then work our way through a number of questions to try to address each of those issues identified. So that's why it's really important that everyone has a close look at that Excel sheet to really make sure that people's positions have been correctly identified, as well as the concerns that have been noted, if they've been accurately summarized or if there's anything missing. And just a last point, the topics listed, the order is actually random. So I think there as well, if people have suggestions, that we should, you know, start with those that maybe have less concerns, or with the harder ones where more concerns have been expressed. I think that's something that the working group may want to consider. But, you know, we just listed them as we saw them, I think, on the list in the wiki.
Great. Thanks, Marika. Steve, go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to thank you for putting together this this plan. I think, if anything, it's not quite ambitious enough in that it really provides no – there doesn't seem to be any wiggle room if we're going to have something out for Durban. I think, you know, we come right up against the deadline there. So I would encourage – Let's look at it and see if there's anything we can compress a little bit earlier. And you know, for example, if we have 2 weeks on competition and registry services, we have 2 weeks on cost implications. And I agree we should probably have 2 weeks on privacy and data protection. I think that's going to be an issue that requires some discussion. But I would just encourage us to look at if there's any place here where we can reduce one of these topics from 2 weeks to 1 week. And that would help us give us a little bit of a cushion in case there are issues about the draft initial report. As it stands now, we have to, you know, we review it. We don't really review it until 3 days before the deadline. So I would hope that we could try to push that back a week, have a discussion of it on June 11th, and that'll give us a little more time to get things done. That's my only suggestion, is just to review this and see if there's any place where we can compress a bit earlier on to try to arrive at that. Thanks.
Yeah, I like that suggestion. And as you were talking, Steve, another idea that I had was that maybe we can do some work in parallel. Marika, I don't know what your reaction to this idea would be, but would it be possible to basically start building the initial report draft section by section, so that at the end of each of these meetings, you could add a section to the report based on the results of that meeting, so that instead of having a whole draft come out at once, you know, we have sort of the standard draft framework basically out right away, and then fill in the chunks as we go through this. Go ahead, Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. We could definitely already start working on, you know, the framework for the initial report and start filling in some of you know, the basic information, like, you know, the background, you know, membership list, annexes. But again, I think the idea behind the template was indeed to do it in that way. So after each meeting, either, you know, a sub-team or someone will be assigned based on the discussions of that day, try to fill in the template with, indeed, the responses. Like, you know, what did the working group discuss? What is the issue? You know, what does the working group recommend? What concerns have been identified? You know, are those valid concerns, and, you know, related to the specific issue? Are there broader concerns? Is there anything in specific the working group is recommending to address the concerns expressed? And basically use that template then at the next meeting to review. And again, you know, to Steve's comment, if that document goes on the mailing list and no one expresses any concerns, you know, it can just be a topic at the next meeting saying, well, we haven't seen anyone proposing any edits or you know, disagreeing what has been proposed. So we can just sign off on that in the first 5 minutes and then move on to the next topic. So I think the idea is I've tried to build in a bit of, you know, redundancy and additional meetings to allow enough time, because I've seen work plans where we actually, you know, think we can be done in one meeting, and then it turns out we actually need 3 or 4 meetings. So I think the idea is here that if we move faster, you know, there's no problem in just adjusting as we go. And indeed, if, you know, we only need one meeting or half a meeting on a certain topic, then to just jump into the next one. So I think there's a lot of flexibility here, but we did try to build it in such a way to, you know, ensure that all the topics do have sufficient time and there is some flexibility there if more time is needed for some or less time for others.
Yeah, and so again, I'm going to ask everybody's permission to sort of push these along a bit, but at the same time, I want to make it clear that if people are feeling I'm pushing it too fast, you should not be shy about letting me know about that, because that's, again, the intent there is just to try and hit a pretty aggressive deadline. It's not to cut off debate. Okay, I don't see any other hands in the queue. I've already taken a pretty hard look at this work plan, and I'm pretty comfortable with it. And so unless I hear cries of outrage, this is the way we'll go. And I do want to take a moment just to thank Lars and Marika for another piece of really good work. This is a very collaborative effort between the three of us to get these out, and it's been a joy to work with them on this. So just want to take a moment to let you know about that. Carolyn, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just checking the time that we had scheduled for the meeting in Beijing. Is that at all flexible? I was just checking on another meeting that's scheduled overlaps somewhat with that and confirmed that was going to be about the same time. I didn't know whether there was any flexibility on moving that to another morning.
I'm going to hand that one to Marika. My immediate sense is that the schedule's getting fairly frozen, but Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. I think it will be challenging because I think for now we've set it on Tuesday. There's constituency day, and some groups, I think, start pretty early in the day. On Wednesday, we already have another working group that's having a breakfast meeting. Some already said on Thursday that there's an ASEC meeting that starts, I think, as well early. So I think we have a rather limited window of options here, and that's why we've opted for the Monday. So,
well, that's fine. I just wanted to ask the question, and I'll work around that. Thanks.
Thanks, Carolyn. And I think that this meeting is more skippable in a way than the meeting in Durban, because this meeting is primarily going to be a working meeting, whereas the one in Durban is going to be a review meeting of the initial report. And so, Marika confirmed the sense that I've got. Scheduling these meetings is, as we all know, very challenging, and I think we're sort of frozen on this one now. Okay, enough on the work plan, unless there's something else on other people's minds. Why don't we go to the first draft templates? Let's see. I guess we could start with the one that was submitted by Steve, since he's here. Alan's not on the call. We'll take a look at the authoritativeness one. Marika, let's puzzle through how we want to handle this. This is their response to the... So, Steve, pardon me while I turn you into a test case, because I'm sort of learning how to do this at the same time everybody else is. Is the thought here, Marika, that we would go through the material from the sub-team and confirm it, and then take that to the spreadsheet for summarization, or the other way around, or what was your thinking in terms of how this would play out?
This is Marika. I think for the template, at least, my idea was that it was something that would basically be put back to the working group to confirm that the working group agrees with the findings of the sub-team, and ideally it would come with a recommendation. I see here, actually, I don't think a conclusion has been drawn, but I just quickly read over it. So I think if that's not there, that's something the working group may want to consider adding or clarifying what the conclusion is for that specific topic. We can then indeed feed that back into the Excel table, but more as the, you know, what is the working group's position on that item? I think now we have a, we don't have an official consensus statement. We're just saying, you know, majority or most agree or almost all agree. So maybe at that point as well, there's a way of saying, well, you know, we do have consensus that from the perspective of this topic, you know, there should be a recommendation to require the quiz, or there's a, you know, recommendation that we shouldn't be requiring, or, you know, so some alternative of variation of that. But I think for this item, we need to pull up the actual Excel sheet, because I don't recall that there were any specific items identified here. So we may need to look back then as well at the Excel sheet to see whether there were any specific items identified as concerns in relation to this issue and address it separately if they haven't been considered yet as part of the subteam. But I think, you know, Steve should be able to probably provide us an overview there, because I think most of the subteams have looked at the comments and have tried to address those concerns raised. So we can actually translate this back again as well in the Excel sheet. But in principle, the Excel sheet is more a tool to guide us through the discussion, but I think it's something we probably will import maybe as an annex in the report to show, you know, how we've conducted our work. But basically the text of this is intended to feed into the issue report as a description of, you know, the working group deliberations and as well as the conclusions that the working group made with regard to the specific topic.
Okay. So given the sort of complication of putting two documents on the screen at the same time, let me play back what I just heard. Essentially, what you're looking at on the screen is, well, what you're looking at on the screen is the draft from the subteam filling out the template from their work. And they've built some questions in that we need to work through. They'll take this discussion back. At the same time, one of the things that we might ask the subteam to do is take a look at that Excel spreadsheet that is the summary, and see if any of the issues identified in there, just in the brief summary that we've come up with, still need to be addressed. And so sort of take today's conversation plus anything coming out of the spreadsheet back to the subgroup for one last pass of editing. And then this would come back here next week for hopefully a final review. And then I think that the habit probably would be if we, let me imagine a future that says we get through our final review next week, pretty comfortable with the result, we would then post that to the list saying, this is our pretty comfortable result that we're putting out for a consensus call to get people to really look at it hard one last time. And then 2 weeks from today, presuming that that all went well, we would confirm consensus on this and release it for inclusion into the initial report. Now I'm getting a sidebar from Marika. Oh, can you pull up the spreadsheet in addition to this, Marika, on the screen? If there's a way to get them both on the screen at the same time, that would be great. But I was assuming that might... Oh, look at this.
It does mean that the parts will get a bit smaller, so you may need to adjust the size of the document to be able to see it.
Oh, that's not bad. I can read it okay. Meanwhile, while that's all happening, Steve, have you got any sort of overview thoughts that you want to share with us about this? I think this is a lovely draft and appreciate all the work that you guys have done on it. So with that, I'll just throw the ball to you for a minute while that spreadsheet's coming up, and then we can circle around to that.
Okay. I think it is responsive to the spreadsheet, because as I understand the spreadsheet, that's a distillation of what the responses were from the stakeholder groups and constituencies, and we reviewed all of those. And in fact, this draft really reflects that review. So hopefully we've addressed this. The problem came in really, I think I noticed in Alan's draft, he had encountered this too, that some of what we're doing is assuming that there is thick who is, you know, what's the impact? So the last two questions may be a little bit off point because they go into, you know, should there be thick who is? And we were asked to really look at what would be the impacts. What we did is we started out with a definition, which I really need to thank Volker for a lot of this because a lot of the material in quotes is from him. We described what we understand the situation to be in current thin environments and in current thick environments, and we were struck by the fact that there really has not, as far as we were able to determine, there was not an authoritative ICANN statement on which, in the thick environment where there's a registry who is and a registrar who is, there's been no official pronouncement as far as which one was authoritative. This made us wonder whether that was actually necessary in this working group to tackle, or whether there was just that the registry data was inherently authoritative. I think the main question that we found as we surveyed the responses from the stakeholder groups and constituencies, and as we in the discussion we had on the list was that there's one fact here, which is that the registrar remains the entity that collects the data, and then in a thin environment, it holds most of that data. It sends a little bit of it to the registry, and I think we all agree that that is authoritative in that environment, just those data elements. But in the thin registry, the registrar holds most of the data itself. And in a thick environment, it passes all that data, or at least a larger set of that data, to the registry. And there was some question about whether, if the registrar is responsible for collecting it, can the registry data be authoritative, or was there an inconsistency there? And we posed that question on the list, and the only responses we got were that isn't a problem. The data doesn't become authoritative until it enters the registry database. The registrar collects it, but until the registrar sends it along to the registry, it's not authoritative. So that was a description of the status quo in the thick who is registries that we have now. So that it seemed as that was the point of difference, the main point of difference between the majority of respondents who were comfortable with the registry data being authoritative, and some thought that was inevitable, and the minority of respondents who thought that the registrar data should be authoritative because they're the ones that collect it. If that's viewed as a problem, then there is a problem. There could be a problem with the registry data being authoritative, but most of the people who discussed it did not think that was a problem. So I hope that's helpful as an overview of what our discussions were.
That's perfect as an overview, and it kind of walked us through the document, gave us, I think, all a chance to read it a bit more carefully than we might have on the list. I think at this point what I'd like to do is open this up to the group for comments, suggestions, reactions. And I think that the way that you all should think about this is that they've asked some questions in this, and we probably need to take a stab at answering those. And we also need to react to the conclusions that they've arrived at. And with that, I'd keep an eye on the queue and see if there are strong reactions one way or the other. Certainly the direction that Steve is implying would be to essentially adhere to the status quo in other thick registries, which makes a lot of sense to me. I'm doing a radio thing, waiting for the queue to build, and not much is showing up, which may be good. It may mean that we're in pretty much agreement on this, in which case I won't belabor it. Marika, go ahead.
This is Marika. I just wanted to point out that in the Excel sheet, I did identify one comment, which I think is partly already addressed by what Steve was talking about, from the NCUC, which basically said that the registrar holds the contractual relationship with the registrant, and that relationship should be honored and maintained. And I think as part of our draft response in the Excel sheet, we already noted that SECOIS actually does not change the contractual relationship between the registrar and the registrant. So this is potentially not an issue as it's currently phrased. So just to note as well that that was one of the specific items identified as part of the public comments received or the constituency statement.
Thanks, Marika. Mark, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to jump in on that. This document touches on that a little bit in question five, but it points out there's authoritative, but then there's authoritative for accuracy. And I think that's an important point in that the registry itself doesn't have a relationship with the registrant. So even if the registry itself is viewed as authoritative, as the authoritative source, the registry itself can in no way be authoritative for its accuracy. I think that's what the point of the response there in question five, is that what Mariko was touching on as well is that the registrar still maintain that relationship with the registrant. And that they're responsible for and have the contractual relationship with the accuracy of the data. Thank you.
I think that's a nice solution. That was certainly a big topic in the drafting team when we were writing the charter, was the distinction between the different flavors of authoritative. And so that seems like a good start on language that sort of clarifies that puzzle. So I think that's great. Anything else that people have to say about this? I don't want to slow us down. So if people are fairly comfortable with where this is going, Steve, is there any feedback that you want from the group on any of the, there's essentially a question posed in the middle in italics that sort of says, whether it's necessary to recommend a policy on this issue. Does the sub-team have a preference on that?
Well, I think most of the people who spoke up on this felt that it was not necessary to have a policy on this issue. So, yes, we would be interested in reactions to that.
All right. I mean, and I tend to understand and at least initially agree with that approach. Less is more, in my view. So if that's okay with folks, we'll treat that as... Is there anybody who feels very strongly the other way? Maybe let me put it that way, just to try and tease that out. Again, I'm not seeing... Mark, I'm assuming that's an old hand. Yep. Okay, it's an old hand. This is the last call. I'm going to call this conversation done. I didn't hear any substantive changes being suggested, so we might be able to push this one to Marika. No, let's see, in our process what we were going to do is circulate this to the list.
This has gone to the full list.
Yeah, but this has gone to the full list, and...
But it was just before this call.
Yeah, and I'm sort of thinking that now we send it to the list again, perhaps answering that question that you pose in italics in the affirmative that says... the full group has reviewed this question and agrees with the majority of the members of the subteam that no new policy is required, and send that out as an initial consensus call to the list. Let people read it hard, ponder it, converse on the list, bring it back next week for final consensus, at which point we'd release it to Marika and Lars for redrafting into the initial report. Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. I was just wondering if you already would like us to do a bit of redrafting at this stage as well, adding, for example, in the point that Mark made on the authoritative for accuracy, and maybe also try to already write up like a kind of conclusion or recommendation so we can already start that process at the same time. I don't know if that's helpful or whether you want to do that more at as a second phase part of looking at this draft.
This is Steve. I'm certainly comfortable with that.
Yeah, and I was going to agree that I may have invented a two-step process when really what we need is take one of those steps out. So maybe the next step in this, and Steve, I apologize again for sort of making you the test case, but the next stage on since we've got tentative agreement from the group, is to release this to Marika to do a draft, and then we finally edit. We really work hard on the editing of the draft that Marika and Lars developed rather than the one that you've developed, but use the subgroup's input as feeding into Marika. That takes a bit of pressure off subteam groups and especially subteam group leaders for having to develop a finely crafted document.
Well,
so
this is Steve.
That.
Yeah, that's appreciated, certainly. But also, I think the advantage is that then we have some consistency of style so that,
yeah,
you know, each of these doesn't look totally different from one another. So I'm certainly supportive of that, and I would look forward to seeing the staff edits of this or the staff redraft of this on the list.
Great. This is great. I'm loving this. Anything else on this one, folks, before we move on? Okay. Let's see. Susan Kawaguchi, you're on the call.
I am on the call.
And I salute you for that. I can't keep straight who's got which pieces in. Do you have a draft of this flavor in that we can take a look at?
I do not, unfortunately, but I do have some thoughts.
Okay.
I'm not getting a whole lot of feedback from the team, so but I did review the comments, and there seems to be three main issues that people have highlighted in their comments, and but there's no major issues that I could see. So basically, they're concerned with the cost of the synchronization of the data, the stability, and the number of records involved. So I sent that all out to our team again yesterday, and haven't gotten any feedback. But I can put something together very similar to what Steve did and submit to the group this week. So, you know, my recommendation would be that if the whole, you know, if we recommend SICWHIZ, that these three criteria would be considered in the transition plan, that they would need to be, the plan would need to be mindful of those three issues. But also, I think that because there's other work going on with the WHOIS record in the ICANN world, that that the standardized format would be really extremely important in transitioning any data. So, and I think there is, I'm not sure where, but I know that somewhere they are working on a standardized format that might be in the RAA, I'm not sure. And so it would, you know, that would definitely help with any synchronization problems, in my opinion. So about all I have today. I'll see if I can get
Well, it's great to have you on the call, and it's I think would be really useful to have that draft come in front of us.
Okay.
First on the list, and then we'll pick it up again on the next call and sort of work our way through that. So that's great. And
I can do that. I'll try to get it to the list by tomorrow afternoon.
That'd be fantastic. Volker, go ahead.
Okay. I think the standardized format issue is now in public comment as part of that so-called RAA. I'm not very happy about the word agreement in that context.
we're not going there.
At least I can have posted the current state of affairs with the RAA negotiations, and part of that is the specification concerning the who is data, and that contains also references to the standardized format. I'll just try to find the link for that, and then I'll post it in the chat.
Oh, that's great.
Thank you.
Anything else on Susan's thoughts? I want to circle back to something Avri posted in the chat in a minute, but just wanted to see if there's anything from anybody else on Susan's. Okay, one of the things that Avri volunteered to do and went ahead and did is posted proposed language to add to the list of questions for the expert group. And it's in the chat now and at least still visible to me, so everybody sort of refrain from posting to the chat real quick for just a minute while we maybe capture that and throw it off to the other side of the Adobe room so that we can give it a real quick read.
Yeah, it's and, got some literacies in it, but hey, it's something I wrote, so of course
it's
got literacies in it.
It's hard to compose that stuff in the chat, so I get that. And so maybe, you know, correct for illiteracies, but I just want people to sort of take a look at that. I think what we're going to go ahead and do is forward that to the expert group, unless somebody just goes nuts in the next couple of minutes. And so just take a moment to look at that, and then we'll push along here. Okay, we've got another 10 minutes. I'm gonna go for one more. Alan's group pushed a summary out to the list as well, and I don't believe Alan's on the call today. Is there anybody else from his group that wants to sort of step into Alan's shoes and essentially be the rapporteur for this, or shall we just stumble through it as a group? Not seeing a huge lunge at the gate, but give it a try. This is the question of stability, and so what Alan's sub-team has come up with is sort of, you know, what's the definition? It's the availability of who is data in the case of a business or technical failure. And goes on from there. And I think that this, Steve is right, this is one of those ones sort of similar to Steve's, where well, no, this is different. This is, I'm now revealing that I haven't reviewed these with any great care either. I'm not sure. Let's see if we can drag through the first one in the next 8 minutes and see how we do. So, the next one is describe the circumstances of issue A in a thin Whois environment. Within thin Whois, there are two sources of copies. There's one in the registrar, and there's one with the escrow service that's used by the registrar. And then what Alan goes on to say is, if you presume that one of those two sources fails, there is one fallback. If the if the escrow fails, there is still the registrar's copy, and conversely. Then the next question in the template is describe the circumstances in a thick model, and Alan's comment there is that under today's rules, there are the two sources are still there, and in addition, there are two more. There's the registry copy of the WHOIS data and the escrow service that's used by the registry, resulting in a total of four. So in the case of a failure of any one of those, there would be three instead of one. So that's a pretty dramatic increase in the number of copies of the data. The next one says, well, what's the advantage of thick WHOIS given this issue of redundancy? And their response is alluding back to this three fallback sources instead of one. And then they make the point, since most catastrophic failures are often the result of multiple failures, having multiple backups is preferred. If I read that sentence differently, I think I read the emphasis quite wrong. Let me reread that. Since most catastrophic failures are often the result of multiple failures, multiple backups is preferred, and the presumption there is that there is maybe a remote chance that a catastrophic failure could take out both the registrar and its escrow copy. That would have to be a pretty amazing catastrophe, but I think the point that they're making is four is better than two in that kind of a circumstance. Then they say, well, what's the downside of thick WHOIS? And some participants in the subgroup believe that having personal data in multiple sites makes that data more susceptible to attack or misuse, and then they punt that issue to the data protection team. And I think maybe what we need to do there is just let the data protection team know that that issue is being handed off to them and confirm that they've accepted that. And so maybe, Marika, if you could circle back to... Well, Marie, if you could take that back to the sub-team, data protection sub-team, just to make sure that we didn't throw the ball on one side and not have it get caught on the other. Then the next question is, does data imply that we were recommending thick or recommending thin, or is it neutral? And here they say, most parties agree that multiple copies are better, but some feel that four copies are excessive. Most participants support the benefits of thick. The two non-commercial stakeholder group constituencies argue that there are risks associated with the registry having the data, and VeriSign argues that two copies are sufficient. Registrars argue that in a thick model, registrar escrow is no longer needed, resulting in three copies. So there seems to be some divergence of views on question six as to how many and where. And I'll just read the last one and then open the queue up. Oh, we're running really out of time. But I think it's still worthwhile to just go through this one, and we'll probably pick this conversation up again on the next call. Hang on just a second, Rick, and let me just read this last one, then I'll get to you in the queue. The last question in the template was, if your response to question six is that thick should be recommended, please provide any additional considerations. And the group said, well, on balance, most but not all participants believe that thick provides additional stability over the thin, and some feel that this additional stability is not required, while others believe that there's a privacy price to pay for this extra stability. So there I've done the reading, the dramatic reading, Rick, your hand went down. Did I accidentally resolve something?
No, I was just lowering it so that you wouldn't think that it was an old question. My point is merely that no one provides any data on their feelings. It's kind of like, you know, asking some girls at a pillow party. You know, there's no empirical evidence to support any of the statements. And so what I would really like, or something that would really help us, I think, is if when we do this kind of outreach, that we ask not just for how you feel about this particular topic, because it seems ICANN really is about polling for the status quo, that we ask them to provide some supporting materials, such as many of the statements that you just made could potentially be supported with a factual piece or data element, a paper that actually describes how they arrived at that conclusion. Because, you know, if we're just going to weigh how people feel about something, we can't negotiate whether it's good or not.
Yeah, and I was essentially just doing a dramatic reading. It's too bad that Alan's not here today, but I think that Rick is on to something with this. It would be good to have some empirical analysis of this. And the question is, who does it and how fast could we get it? So I'll throw that out for the sub-team to think about and push through two more folks in the queue really fast, and then we'll wrap the call up for today and sort of pick up right here on the next call. Volker, go ahead. Oh, Volker's hand went down just as I said his name. Mark, I think you get the last word.
All right. Sorry, I was on mute. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Sorry, Volker. Volker first and then Mark.
One thing that I might have missed, but I don't think it was there, one thing that we should also maybe refer back to the availability subgroup is the question of whether availability means public availability. So if registrars should also be required to provide a public data of public service of who is data in PIC registries, as they do now, even though nobody queries it because nobody is pointed there from the registry. I think registrars currently are required to keep that data, and therefore the data is available in event of a failure. But the question remains if that should be a public availability through a WHOIS service or should just be a fallback position for the registry.
Thanks. And I want to pass that one directly back. Let's see. Let me collect my wits here. So I'm not recording action points. Hopefully somebody is. I'd say at the very end of the call. Mark, I think you get the last word, and then we're going to wrap it up.
All right, I'll try and be quick. One request for the data escrow and stability subgroup to look at is when you have multiple copies of this data, they're not going to be in sync, right? An escrow copy from two different sources, even if it happens at unless it happens at exactly the same time, there's going to be discrepancies. So I guess my request to ask the subgroup to take a look at would be, when there are discrepancies, whose version is authoritative, or are there issues with those discrepancies around having, multiple copies that aren't necessarily exactly in sync. So it's just a request from me for the subgroup to take a look at. Thank you.
And a small recommendation on that, there's a technique called multiple masters. It's fairly well established. Lots of systems do it, and should not be a problem. Lots of academic papers come out of it.
What was that term again, Rick? That was Rick Wesson for the transcript.
Multiple masters.
Multiple masters.
Generally used in LDAP Active Directory synchronization.
Yeah, I think that would be good, because I think that it would be useful to point to some of the technical standards that often apply. You know, this is a fairly common situation with multiple backup situations, you know, to bring those back in sync. I'm getting a call on another line. This meeting has run a bit over, and so I'm going to drop off very quickly because I'm tending my dad in the hospital, and this is about that. So thanks for the conversation. I'll see you in a week, folks.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Have a good day.
Thanks, Mikey.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.